interesting question is, what is it about this president that has stripped away the veneer of respect that normally accompanies the office of the president? Why do Republicans think this president is unpresidential and shouldn't dare to request this kind of thing? It strikes me that it could be the economic times, it could be that he won so big in 2008, or it could be, let's face it, the color of his skin. This is an...
Everybody, welcome back. I'm ever yours, Alan Nathan, the militant moderate. Once again, this is the Oasis. For those who have an aversion to the left-right, black-white, two-dimensional approach, those were the musings of Richard Wolff, MSNBC contributor. He was speaking with Lawrence O'Donnell, host of the last show. Ever yours, Alan Nathan, the militant moderate. We have before us an old friend of the program, one of my regulars for this time of the week, Mark Levine. He, of course, a former congressional attorney and Washington, D.C. radio host on Pacifica Radio's WPFW. You can learn more about Mark by going to www.marklevineradio.com and tell us about your Scoop show.
I host the Inside Scoop on local TV on Mondays, and I also regularly guest host the Leslie Marshall Show, and I host the Raucous Caucus on Tuesday nights.
There we go, and you and I both have the dubious honor of having... once hosted the same international television show that we've already discussed, which is a lot of fun, The American Dream. You heard the clip. Do you ever find it tedious that some folks are just of the impression that whenever their guy is under political attack, if he happens to be a minority, it's just too irresistible to not refer to that person's minority status as the reason for the angst, as opposed to just allowing for the fact that perhaps people just politically disagree with the president? What's your read on this?
Well, I don't think it's political disagreement, nor do I think it's a question of race. I think the Republicans have had a dedicated plan, really ever since the time of Newt Gingrich in 1994, to make the president seem illegitimate if he is a Democratic president. And so this kind of harsh language and these unpresidential things, frankly, I'm very upset by the tone of politics, and Newt Gingrich began it in 94, and it's only gotten worse since. I don't think it's because Obama's black. I think it's because he's a Democrat.
You don't believe it's because he's black. You think it's because he's a Democrat.
They did the same thing to Bill Clinton. Vince Foster, did he murder Vince Foster? It's ridiculous. It's over the top. It's as crazy as the idea that Barack Obama was born in Kenya. These are wild notions, and they're all done to discredit the president with people of, let's say, limited brain capacity. But it works because there are those people around, and the Republicans manipulated. Again, they're not doing it because Obama's black.
Actually, no. That was exposed because people were disabused of that assumption right out of the gate. Once Obama came out with, for instance, his birth certificate, all the birthers disappeared.
It seems
that once you're up front and open, all the attacks that would otherwise be leveled against you evaporate.
No, there's a claim that he's a Muslim and he went to a madrasa. There's a claim that
but you need to be able to reference those things that only an infinitesimal section of the country actually feel as a way to deflect the greater preponderance of genuinely universal felt angst against this guy. We might want to remember he's got a 28% rating for approval in his handling of the economy.
No.
Let me get this straight. The guy's... It doesn't matter that he's black when we vote for him as president, but because we're now sometimes critical of what he does, it must just be because of his race.
Well, I said it wasn't because of his race.
No, but many in your side do treat it as such. I mean, we had some recent friends on the show. I'll tell you, one recent guest, Florida GOP Representative Alan West, and he's been on record as saying that he wants to guide fellow African-Americans off the quote-unquote Democratic plantation. Now, Washington Examiner columnist Gregory Kane reminded folks of how civil rights leader Charles Evers, brother of slain NAACP field secretary and activist Medgar Evers, has said almost the same exact thing, adding, and I'm not kidding, quote, "Democrats don't know that welfare's a sickness, which ruins families. Deep down, most Democrats want the poor to stay poor, so they'll always need the Democrats' protection. And deep down, most civil rights leaders want racism to live on, so we'll always need civil rights groups." Now, I got to ask you, was civil rights NAACP activist Charles Evers correct on any level, or is he too an Uncle Tom because he had the unmitigated goal to hold a view different from the professional left? What's your read?
He is an Uncle Tom, but not because his view is different, but because of the way he expressed his view. It's one thing to say that you disagree with President Obama's policies. You have
The quotation I just gave you was from Charles Evers,
ago. And my point about Charles Evers is that the quotation suggesting that civil rights leaders want racism It's kind of like suggesting that George Bush wanted all those Americans to die in Iraq. It's over the top and it's wrong. It's beyond the pale, I think, of legitimate political.
But this discourse. Is a man who was a civil rights leader, so he's
no,
given
he's
us an inside
of
track
was,
of human
that
nature that I
leader.
Think we can find applicable to across the board all races and colors. You know this as well as I, that you have a particular problem. A group gets together to fight the problem. It becomes a cottage industry. Guess what? Efficacy is realized. There's a great declination of the problem in question. All of a sudden, the people who've been making money as a living for the purpose of fighting it now have less about which to fight and accordingly feel that the relevance of their employment is going to be rightfully threatened. That is not an unfathomable result. We know this occurs across the board in a whole host of other activities. Why can't it be in this one too?
Alan, if you think that racism is over...
No. That's not my measure. That's not the measure. That's
country.
A disconnected measure. Do not... Your projections are not my grounds to defend. My saying what I've said had zero correlative relevance to the assumption that racism is dead. I'm saying when people make assertions of racism without premise, they're committing racism in the name of fighting it, thus fulfilling the very definition of racism because they're using race to intimidate dissent. Look what we've seen with the Congressional Black Caucus. What about the congressman from Indiana? Andre, what's his last name again?
I don't know.
Well, Andre, a congressman from Indiana addressing the Black Caucus said that the Tea Partiers wanted to hang blacks from trees. We have, of course, Maxine Waters from the great state of California. What does she say? She said the Tea Party can go to hell. She, too, has made insinuations that they're racist.
Well, hold on. The Tea Party can go to hell is very different from making up a specific, actionable, libelous lie, one that, frankly, could be sued for, to claim that Barack Obama is a Muslim or a socialist or born in Kenya. Those are things that are falsehoods, right? There's one thing, you know this in the law, Alan. It's one thing to say someone can go to hell. Someone's a bad person.
But she said that in addition to referring to them as racist. She said this before.
There are racists in the Tea Party. We've seen them. We've seen the people with that Barack Obama with the bone through the nose. We've seen, there are definitely a racist.
You have racists in the NAACP. You have racists in a lot of organizations. Even Mary Frances Berry, former head of the U.S. Civil Rights Commission, admitted it as much. She said, there's no reason to believe there's any more racists in the Tea Party than anywhere else. But you know what? It's better to have them defending themselves as not being racist than it is to have them talk about joblessness.
There is reason because there's been statistics to look at racial attitudes. And it's been shown that the Tea Party has a greater racial animosity than non-Tea Party whites. So
it's not been shown. Nobody ever saw that. If that were true, Mary Frances Berry would have jumped all over that. And she couldn't because it wasn't there.
Oh, I'll find you a poll, Alan. There are definitely polls about that. But again, I'm not...
You're talking about a poll of whether or not somebody might think about the Tea Party, but not the... Look, they want two things, constitutional... Dude, let me put it this way. It's impossible because I'm a Tea Partier and I support reparations for blacks. Yes, I'll agree with the conservatives in that I'm for smaller government, lower taxes, originalist judges. I supported the war in Iraq. I support the war against fanatical jihadists. But guess what? I'm also pro-choice, pro-gay rights, pro-social safety nets, and pro-reparations for blacks. I'm sorry. When you start making assertions of racism without enough premise anyway, you become the embodiment of the very racism you're trying to fight. So trying to apply disconnected measures that allow for easy escape, because one always wants to detour the discussion onto some self-indulgent road of escapism when they couldn't otherwise engage in a Socratic dialogue, you can go ahead and do so. But guess what? Nobody's buying it. When I say you, I don't mean you personally. I mean your folks in general. Who are they? The far left that have zero capacity for self-appraisal. Folks, stick with us. You are with Battleline Main Street. I'm Alan Nathan. Welcome back, everybody. Welcome back. I'm ever yours, Alan Nathan, the militant moderate. Once again, this is The Oasis. For those who have an aversion to the left-right, black-white, two-dimensional approach, and we're discussing matters of race, we find ourselves a little more locked into that. We were chatting about the congressman from Indiana, who made this bold statement that, in fact, people in the Tea Party would like to see blacks hanging from trees. And it strikes me that whenever people go in that direction, if they can't back up assertions with something in the way of foundation, then they're actually becoming the embodiment of the very thing they're criticizing others of being. That seems self-evident. Because what is ultimately racism all about? It is essentially assessing the value of somebody in a fashion that is predicated on their ethnicity versus who they are as an individual. So once we go in that direction, if that is indeed the standard and everybody is to be held to it equally and universally, well, then that means, darn it, when you have bigots, they're bigots, and if their ethnicity is not white, that should not be any greater protection for them. We have assisting me in the opining, old friend of the show, Mark Levine, again, former congressional attorney and Washington, D.C. radio host on Pacifica Radio's WPFW. Also, check out more about Mark on marklevineradio.com. Mark, good to have you back.
Thanks, Alan. I was thinking about what you said for the break. And during the break, I went and I ran to Google.
I knew you would.
I typed in Tea Party racist poll because I knew there was a poll out there. And I found one. And I want to be clear, I'm not at all attacking you as racist in any way, shape, or form. You can be a Tea Partier and not be racist, of course. And I think that's exactly where you find yourself.
Just as you can be a Democrat and still be a racist.
Absolutely, you can.
Thank you.
Well, that's true. So the point is that just because you self-identify with a group does not mean you share all the attitudes of the group. But I do want to read to you.
It's a very you do realize we're talking about a very fragmented colony of folks. That's one of the advantages that they have, which drives the left absolutely nuts. You can't definitively ever put them in one basket, except for one thing. They do happen to share a common goal of constitutional compliance and responsible spending. That's it. Go ahead.
Well, for constitutional compliance, I would argue that, frankly, progressives are much better at it, whereas the Tea Partiers...
No, they're forever ignorant because they embrace the living document theory, and of course, if the living document theory were true, that would mean that any constitutional amendment we pass today could be ignored by the courts tomorrow, thus torpedoing any credibility that the living document assumption ever had, because it has been based on the assumption, the belief, that there is zero end of judicial review's reach, and we know for a fact that there is an end to judicial review. Judicial review, by the way, everybody, was born out of Mulberry versus Madison, 1803, essentially allowing the Supreme Court, or crystallizing that the Supreme Court has the authority to interpret the Constitution when determining whether or not challenged legislative law indeed passes constitutional muster, which is great because, fine, plenty of times the Constitution just doesn't have corresponding language to deal with a particular challenge and focus, so for better or for worse, we go with the Supreme Court. But when the Constitution does have direct wording and the Supreme Court would disregard our founding document on point, well, then it will have had committed a hostile act. People say, well, Alan, how do you know when that has happened? How do you know when judicial review has gone too far as an excuse to support the living document theory? That's easy. That would be when the Supreme Court would rule that the Constitution is in opposition to its own text. And unfortunately, that's what's so flawed about the left. They believe in the living document. Well, which means that they don't believe in any standards at all. Go ahead.
To be clear, Alan, I am a strict constructionist. I've always been one. That's why I was so angry when the Supreme Court violated the Constitution and chose the president when Al Gore won the election of 2000. That's why I was incredibly angry when Antonin Scalia said that corporations are people and they have constitutional rights, but people aren't people and don't have constitutional rights. But let me go back to my
When did Scalia ever say that people are not people and don't have constitutional rights?
When he said that the people who give money to a candidate in the recent Arizona decision, he said, in fact, that the people of Arizona who voted to allow equal rights to be heard by the public, he said, no, if you have more money, you have more right to be heard. Poor people don't have a voice. Rich corporations do. And I find that offensive and unconstitutional. But I want to get my poll out.
I know for a fact he did not say that, but I'm looking at the clock, and I want to give you a chance to get onto the other issue. But go ahead.
So this is a poll from the University of Washington.
Okay.
It polled thousands of people in six states. And here's what they found. They found that on the question of whether blacks would be as well off as whites if they just tried harder, okay, 73% of Tea Partiers agreed with that statement. Only 33% of people who oppose the Tea Party agreed with that statement, and those that neither agreed nor could disagree with the Tea Party were in the middle. We're about 55%. 35% of those who strongly approve of the Tea Party agreed that blacks were hardworking, compared with 55% of those who opposed the Tea Party. Only 45% of Tea Party supporters said blacks were intelligent, compared with 59% of the Tea Party opponents. Only 41% of Tea Party supporters said blacks were trustworthy, compared with 57%. The same is true, by the way, for Latinos. The attitudes toward Latinos are lower among Tea Partiers than they are among those who oppose. So, does it mean that all Tea Partiers are racist? Of course not. But it means that Tea Partiers are less inclined to believe in equal rights for blacks than non-Tea Partiers, and that's just shown out in the polls. That doesn't mean all Tea Partiers are evil, but again, the clearest statement is blacks would be as well off as whites if they just tried harder. That's a huge difference between Tea Partiers and non-Tea Partiers. I think there's still systemic racism that keeps blacks from being as well off as whites if they just tried harder. I'm not saying they couldn't improve their condition, but I'm saying they could not be as well off as whites because there's still systemic racism.
I got to tell you, my friend, it is amazing. It's unfortunate that a few years ago, equal fanfare over the issue of race wasn't made about West Virginia Senator Democrat Robert Byrd, the late Robert Byrd, when he repeatedly used the term white N. All right. Also, less egregiously, but still unpardonable, I think, is the relative pass that was given to then-Senator Hillary Clinton. You remember this, because in January 04, she stereotyped Indian Americans by saying that Mahatma Gandhi ran a gas station in St. Louis. Also attributing monolithic assumptions to this demographic, guess who? Then-Senator Joe Biden out of Delaware. In July of that year, he was barely grazed by the press after asserting that, quote, you cannot go to a 7-Eleven or a Dunkin' Donut unless you have a slight Indian accent. I'm not kidding. And, of course, I love the one in 2003 where Representative Jim Moran blamed the Jews for going into Iraq and later, of course, had to apologize. I got to tell you, man, the press scrutiny on this was so ephemeral as to border on the non-existent.
But you're not addressing my poll. I mean, the poll says that Tea Partiers hold more anti-black attitudes than non-Tea Partiers. I think that's a fact. I don't think it's true of all Tea Partiers, but the poll has been, you know, it's not the only poll that's out there.
There are plenty of other polls.
That's part of the difference. A lot of Tea Partiers simply think racism is over. They think it's not a big deal anymore. It doesn't exist anymore.
No, no, no. There's a difference between knowing that racism is not over versus knowing when people are using it because they need to detour the discussion onto some other ground. Otherwise, they're going to lose the argument. Again, you cannot make assertions of racism without premise. When you have this congressman from the Congressional Black Caucus saying that Tea Partiers want to hang blacks from trees with absolutely no reference whatsoever, when you have folks like Congressman Doyle referring to Tea Partiers as terrorists, I'm sorry. That's unforgivable. And you know what? These guys have zero moral authority because these are the same ones who've been preaching to all of us about how we need to apply greater levels of civility. Well, I'm sorry. I am sick and tired. I want everybody to know that they should never, ever let others dictate their dissent in the name of a civility they never practice.
Alan, I don't defend those statements. I think it's ridiculous to say Tea Partiers want to hang blacks from the whatever. It is true that Tea Partiers believe, at least 73% of them, apparently, that racism is over. I'm sure you're that 27% that doesn't believe that.
Somebody can absolutely nail, somebody can nail somebody for making a bad faith accusation of racism without also being somebody who assumes that racism doesn't exist. This is, again, a case where we have these disconnected measures. And, again, disconnected measures do not an argument make. The only legitimate measure when really gauging relevant points in any dialogue or debate is the one born out of the original rub first exposing the conflict. So when I point out to you that a left-winger who, because he's losing a political argument, needs to cry racism, even though there's not the least infinitesimal correlative relevance between the assertion and the reality, when somebody points that out, that does not equal or is not tantamount to assuming that there's an end to racism. Why are you getting these confused?
Because I'm looking at the poll, and the poll shows that 73% of Tea Partiers believe that blacks would do just as well as whites if they just tried harder.
You know what? I'm glad you mentioned that. That's sophistry. That's masturbated sophistry. Because guess what? Every single demographic, including whites, could have that question asked about them, and the answer would be the same. Why? Because everybody is assumed to have a greater chance of increasing the likelihood of success if they just try harder.
No, not increasing the likelihood, as much success as. You're right. Everyone can do better if they just...
If everybody tries harder, odds are they're going to have that much of a better chance of doing better.
That wasn't the question.
You're trying to argue a contrast where there is no difference. Why are you doing that?
Now, the question is, blacks would be as well off as whites. Not better off, but as well off as whites if they just tried harder.
If you're asking if they would be as well off as whites, you're starting with sort of an assumption that they already are not. But when you say to anybody, hey, if you try harder, will you be as well off as any other group? The answer will universally be yes.
I don't think it's true in America. There's still racism out there.
There can still be racism in America. The following two things are not mutually exclusive. There still exists in our country racism, and there is a growing preponderance of those who sophistically make false assertions of racism without premise, and therefore, by doing so, become the very racist pieces of crap that we all want to get rid of anyway. Mark Levine, always a blast. Folks, stick with us. You are with Battleline, Main Street Radio Network. I'm Alan Nathan. Motorcycle.